Bienvenue au train des jeux. Nous sommes ici à jouer au basketball. Il va vous conduire à la victoire. Car bonne dans notre grand départ. Et l'esprit du bel an qui vit en tous les mondes. Et l'esprit qui ne meurt jamais. Parce que basketball, oui, basketball a arrivé.
Jouer.
Hello and welcome to BizCast Ball, the BizCast BizCast. My name is Corbin Smith. With baseball on the stretch run, football, America's on-field manifestation of the nightmare in its heart, back on the TVs of the great unwashed, and the U.S. Open raging forth, one may conclude that basketball is still in its yearly summertime doldrums. But one glimpse at the feet of NBA super reporter Adrian Wojman Wojnarowski will tell a different tale. There is a world of transactions and ruse, raw meat for the provider of premium basketball content to cook up into a good, hearty take. So I'm here with two such content providers. From Vice Sports, Mike Petrilli?
Paolucci.
Paolucci, there we go.
I'm coming on after the last podcast. There was so much difficulty with my last name. I felt like, you know what, set the record straight like the Woj man would.
From Vice Sports and... from the Daily Beast, Knickerblogger, etc., Robert Silverman.
You said you were going to play my intro music now.
Oh, sorry. It got lost in the mail. You need to stop sending CDs over the mail, Bob.
But I have all those CD mailers, and I don't know what to do with them.
Now, Mike.
Yes, Corbin.
My notes here tell me that you went to a clown school in France after college.
Yeah. By me, I mean... you know, Bob Silverman, my alter ego, who's on this podcast with me.
Oh, wow. I seem to have messed up very badly. All right. So what we're going to do today is play a game.
Is that the yoga ball I hear?
Yeah, it's the yoga ball. I'm sitting on the yoga ball.
Nice.
The legendary yoga ball. I like to keep my posture good, especially when I'm doing a vocal thing.
Mm-hmm. Are there any beans cooking right now, Corbin?
No, I'm not cooking any phone beans.
That's too bad. Have you cleaned your kitchen since the last time you destroyed a phone in a vat of boiling beans?
It's not my fault that I occasionally cook in my kitchen, that I don't live somewhere where I can just call somebody to bring stuff to me whenever I want.
I'm not saying you should order out. I'm just saying clean your kitchen, bro.
Let's back the truck up here. You're making it sound like you live in like Uganda. I mean, I've been to Vancouver, Washington. I've eaten at the local Pizza Schmitz. I'm pretty sure someone can deliver if you need them to.
Mike, why did you go to Vancouver, Washington?
I was doing a story in Portland on an Oregon player named Colt Laierla. I did it for SB Nation. And one of his old basketball coaches was working over the bridge in Vancouver. So I drove from Hillsborough to Vancouver and had some time to kill. And that's why I was there. But this is before you and I were acquainted. Otherwise, I would have said, let's meet up.
Where was he working?
It's working at it was some gym. It was really like 15 minutes over the bridge. It was not far in. Although, I mean, you could then just say, well, all of Vancouver is only 15 minutes over the bridge.
Yeah,
I don't know.
It's pretty close.
I can probably look it up. I don't remember where
was
he
was. Was it a high school or just like a private
no,
gym?
No. It was like a private gym.
Oh, okay.
It was like one of those large warehouse strips, almost sort of.
Was it
like,
called Ballers Basketball Academy?
No, but that'd be a pretty cool place to work out, I feel.
That's the one they have in Salmon Creek.
I
occasionally ride by it. I think maybe I need to sign up, really, you know, start working on my game. all right, so we're going to play a game called Take It.
Can I just say, let me insert one thing before we start the action. I just want to say, first of all, that Mike's story is outstanding. It's an outstanding bit of long form, and you should check out that story, people who are listening.
Thanks, Bob.
No, it's great. I love
it. I've never read it. I don't care. I've never read it. I don't care. I don't care for Mike's work.
And the
football.
Other thing is, my favorite recent development in the sports world is that Vancouver, Washington is becoming like your personal Garrison Keillor Lake Wobegon, and we're all learning about it bit by bit.
I enjoy it. I mean, you sold me. The Olympics should be there.
Oh, yeah. Look.
I'm in.
Can I say, so my Olympics thing is not necessarily that it should be in Vancouver, but the idea of it being in a place that's, like, controlled is not a bad idea.
I mean, you made it sound like a dictatorship.
Wait a second. Is Vancouver, Washington its own independent, like, little fiat?
Oh. Fight
does it exist?
I mean, fiefdom, Corbin's fiefdom.
I mean, look, you know, a government is a monopoly of violence, but in our heart, we are our own nation. Which is, you know, by the, by the standards of academic eggheads, no. But okay.
Well then, let's get on with the show. We're off to a great start.
All right.
Rousing start.
Now you are both sports writers, right?
Reportedly.
For money.
Sources.
Allegedly.
Say.
Sometimes you write about basketball. Probably Bob a little more than Mike. I don't know.
True.
Yeah. But
I have a story coming out this weekend about the theater and stuff like that.
Are you Bob, are you kind of like in a summer thing where it's kind of like, I don't have anything to write about? I guess.
Yeah, it's pretty much like that. I mean, I don't know enough about baseball except for the Mets to really, really delve into it. And writing about football just makes me so sad that I've been avoiding it a little bit.
Yeah, I just have jack shit to go on right now. It's like I can write funny stuff, but I just like as far as like anyway.
Anyway. So I'm writing about other things. Like a nice thing play in Central Park.
Oh, that's lovely.
Yeah.
Today, me and Mike and Bob are going to play a game called Take It or Break It. I will read one of Adrian Wojnarowski's recent tweets, and Michael Bob will either offer a take on the matter or say, I leave it on the table. One of those two responses. And I'm going to assign points. A bad take is worth -1 point. You don't want a bad take. Abstaining is worth 1 point, because sometimes the only truth is in silence. A good take will be worth 3 points. A shit hot take, we're talking an excellent take, it's worth 5 points. But a straight trash take will be worth -6 points. But, if you can get underneath -18 points, you will automatically win. By a rule I'm calling the Skip Bayless rule. Enough bad takes, you just win.
Man makes a lot of money for those bad takes. He is winning.
Yeah.
He doesn't spend it on anything. He only eats broccoli and chicken and goes to sleep every night at
glad I'm not the only one that read that, because I remember reading it and was just like, whoa, that's an existence for you.
Yeah, it's like unnerving.
Einstein only having one suit. You know, it's how the great ones keep focused about things like that.
I mean, I just like how he told like his girlfriend, like he straight up said, like when they started dating, like, I will never love you more than my job. Just like 100%. That's a shit hot take right there. That's a 5 point.
Yeah. That's a relationship shit hot take.
That is the hot. Well, that I know what the hottest sports take is, but we'll discuss this later probably.
Yeah. All right.
I figured out what the hottest sports take was recently. Okay.
You're just gonna leave that
fine
out there.
I'll tell you. The hottest possible sports take is ready.
Yep.
All of these athletes should quit and join the army.
Woo!
Woo! It's pretty hot. I have this weird feeling like I've read a version of that somewhere.
I've never seen it.
It's subtle. I could be totally wrong. All right, let's get on with the game.
All right.
Now.
It's been 12 minutes.
So we're going to read Hoff Woj's tweets. And then you can either offer your take or say no. All right, ready?
How do we decide who speaks? Do we just shout really loudly, or do we scream, or do
I
we
mean,
have
we,
buzzers?
We
or
alternate? Like, how's this going?
Oh, wow, buzzers.
Yeah, that would have been good, right?
Yeah.
Put that in the budget for next time.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll talk to HP about that. I'll talk to HP.
Should I just go, eh? Would that be all right?
We'll just say Bob.
Are we all, well, I feel like we could alternate. Like, Corbin could be the games master and go to Bob one time and be one
time.
Oh,
that's a good idea. That's how we're going to do that. That's how we're going to do that. We'll start with somebody.
And then if somebody leaves it on the table, the other person can claim it if they want.
Yeah.
Or
if somebody has an alternate take, they may offer that take as well.
All right. I'm good with that.
All right. The first tweet is actually serious in nature, which is kind of a bummer.
Oh, no. I know where we're going with this.
Yeah. Sources. As Minnesota president coach Flip Saunders battles cancer, Sam Mitchell will be elevated to interim coach. We'll start with Mike. What's your take?
I really, when you told me you were to do this game, I was like, man, are we gonna have to like make a comment about like Sam Mitchell and Flip? It's like, I don't know. I feel bad trashing Flip's like managerial record when he has cancer. I'm gonna leave this on the table. I'm gonna go lukewarm off the top. I need to let the burner simmer a little bit before I drop the heat.
Bob,
I have a take.
Whoa.
Here's my take. It's times like these when we remember what's really important. And our hearts go out to Flip Saunders and his family in what's sure to be a trying time, a battle that he will wage against a foe far tougher and deadlier than any he has faced on the hardwood floors. And that fight will be the true measure of a man, knowing that when he comes back, his team will embrace him with open arms and that they, as a team, will be all the stronger for it.
We're going to call that one a good take, Bob. A good take. 3 points.
I thought that was the shittiest take I could imagine.
Good. I thought it was a good take.
Bob's just sandbagging. What happens if I thought of a take after Bob had a take? Is it too late?
Too late, bro. Damn. It's over.
I mean, you know what? Points-wise, it's too late, but I'll let you get it in 10 seconds.
It's very simple. I want this man to beat cancer, and I want him to play that little Flip rap song from 2006 and just go Flip, Flip, Flip.
10 seconds. Take over.
That's a good take.
I thought about that. That would have gotten me points.
Yes.
All right. Warm up round. That's all good.
All right. Thanks. So we're at Bob 3, Mike 0.
No, I get 1. I passed it. I didn't volunteer a take.
Wait a minute. We didn't establish that as a rule.
I thought you said
sorry. Yes, you get 1 point. I forgot about that.
Yeah, that's the whole, you know, silence is its own.
Sorry.
Was your beautiful poetic phrase? Yes. Silence is the only teacher.
It was poetry.
Yeah.
All right. Yahoo sources. Meta World Peace has begun to work out daily at Lakers facility, inching closer to a return to franchise on 1 year deal. Bob, your take.
My take is this. The Lakers, the once most storied heralded franchise in the entire National Basketball Association, have been reduced to a Hard Knocks-esque sideshow. At this point, there are so many clowns in the car that it's an insult to clown cars. So what the hell? Pile another one in. Bring Meta and now his Chinese-infused brand of crazy on top. More panda shoes for everybody. I want to see what happens when... I want to see... Meta there just to see if he might beat the crap out of Nick Young at some point. I'm all for it. Team Meta.
Mike.
I like it. I like Uncle Ron being back. Nobody ever calls him Uncle Ron except me because he just reminds me of your crazy uncle that does things that you don't understand. But I like it because I think Bob is right that it is a clown car. And this is a man who was a clown, so he would know about the clown car. But I like it because Meta and Swaggy all season long, 82 games. It's the only combination of happiness that can override Kobe just being a miserable grump. It's gonna be awesome. I'm legitimately, for the first time since living in Los Angeles, I actually am excited about something about the Lakers. It's gonna be beautiful. I'm in.
Bob, I have determined your take to be shit hot. 5 points, Bob.
Nice. Can I make a rebuttal take to Mike's take?
Absolutely.
Rebuttal take. Kobe's late period churlishness is my favorite Kobe of all the various iterations of Kobe. Kobe lashing out at everyone imaginable, Kobe giving weird interviews with Anna Huffington, Kobe's self-serving Showtime documentary, which was basically a love letter to himself and his own elbow ligament, is my favorite, most entertaining Kobe of them all.
All right, counterpoint to your counterpoint. Everybody says that. Everybody's wrong. And here's why. Here, you want your shit hot take? Here's your shit hot take. I wrote about this at the Classical like 2 years ago. Kobe, the only honest thing about Kobe Bryant is Kobe Bryant's Twitter account.
Yes!
That's the only thing that's honest. Oh, because here's why. Kobe goes around and says he's a genius because he realizes that all athletes are only like 3% honest. So Kobe gives you 55% honesty. But people, because they're so conditioned to the 3%, they assume that he's just valid and honest about everything. But yet this is the same dude who, like, you know, they ask him, like, oh, Kobe, how do you feel about Dwight? And let's be real, Kobe hates Dwight. We all know Kobe hates Dwight. But when he's been asked this in interviews, I remember when he did the Kimmel thing, he's just like, oh, no, Dwight's a good kid. Dwight and I are cool. Now, man, you fucking hate Dwight. We all know you hate Dwight. The only thing that he does that is actually honest is if you go and see who he follows on Twitter, because you can't mask that. I did a deep dive into this like a couple years ago. He followed, do you know that the first NBA player, the only NBA player he followed for a long time, like 2 years ago, was Chandler Parsons. Why? Whoa. Chandler Parsons, only one. Whoa. You know who else he followed? Fat Amy from freaking Pitch Perfect. Like, that was his sixth follow.
What?
First follow ever, Alex Morgan from the U.S. women's soccer team. Why does Kobe follow these things? That's the only honest thing about Kobe. Everything else, he just does things to make people think he's honest, when really it's just relative to other athletes, and he's still covering his own ass from saying anything really controversial.
Mike,
that was a shit hot take.
Mike,
that was a shit hot rebuttal take.
I was going to dock you a point, because I thought your first take was a little soft, but that was shit hot. 5 points for Mike!
Boom!
Boom.
That was a shit hot take. Also, something I've thought about Kobe forever, that he is more a performer than like anybody. It acts, they're like, oh, he's so, no, he's just playing. Like, he just wants people to say he's like, oh, such a dick. I don't know. Anyway. All right.
Y'all. I was impressed with that take. That had information. That's a good take. Takes with actual information are good.
I have to admit, the Chandler Parsons thing is like borderline unnerving.
It was weird. And that was before like Chandler Parsons was like a thing. Like, that was just when he was like, oh, good small forward for the Rockets. But it's like, why are you following
him? I mean, are we sure that he wasn't a thing internally at that point? Because, like, we all know what, like, we know what Chandler Parsons is. Like, you know.
I think Corbin has a take. I think Corbin is on the verge of a take.
It's just that we know that Chandler Parsons is a dude who likes to get down and is extremely good at getting down.
True. Actually, this is the most relevant thing that I remember from that piece when I was researching it, because it's very relevant to our podcast. Only sports writer he followed, Woj. And you wonder how Woj gets all those exclusives with Kobe.
I mean, we all know how Woj gets all those exclusives with
Pretty
Kobe.
Much.
Like,
we do.
They're homies.
This other Woj fact, which is possibly my favorite Woj story of all time, is a piece I wrote last year for the Cauldron on the NBA draft. And it was like 2 a.m. and I had to file that night. So, and everyone else was done because I'm a really slow writer and I don't write fast. So it was me and about 3 or 4 other writers were in there. One of them was Woj, who was sort of huddled in the corner with all of his devices and earphones in and not really talking. And at one point, Billy King, the Nets general manager, sort of peeks in the media room and says, "Hi, Woj," and then scampers off.
That is so perfect. Oh my God.
I just looked up and I looked at the other people who were there and I was like, did that really happen?
What did he do?
I was too stunned to see what he did. I think he kind of like lifted his head up and said, yeah, hi, and then went back to work. It was just, you know, business as usual. He gets cooed at by general managers. It's a thing. It was so very strange.
That's bizarre. It would have been so good, though, if he just looked up and he's like, God damn it, Billy. I've given you enough scoops for 1 month, right?
I know.
Get out. It just turns out Woj is telling everybody else what to do. Now,
what's the score?
We're gonna add it up at the end.
Okay. Oh, come on.
Come on. Oh, you want me
People
to
People wanna know.
Yeah, you want me to do it on
Okay, it's for the love of the sports. For the love of the sports.
Sports.
Bob has to have Bob has 8 and Mike has 6. All right.
Nice.
Next tweet.
Yes.
Yahoo sources. Philadelphia 76ers reach agreement on deal with second round pick JP Tokoto of the University of North Carolina.
Is this on me or is this Bob? I think this is me, right?
It's Mike. Mike.
That coincides, I might add, with another little Woj bomb. Not a Woj bomb, more of like a Woj, I don't know, like a Woj cherry bomb, because they're not that big at this point in the summer. But they brought in Kendall Marshall, fellow UNC alum in there. And I feel like they're just kind of, this whole transaction thing, it's obviously a tired thing of Sixers, you know, tanking. But I feel like they're getting bored just tanking. So this is just becoming kind of performance art. Like, they're just sitting there and they're like, all right, what are we going to do in the draft this year? Oh, fuck it. Let's draft another big man. Okay, sure. That's fun. What are we doing free agency to fill out our shitty roster? I don't know. Wouldn't it be cool if we just filled out like 6 guys for UNC and just had them hang out? yeah, okay, what's Kendall Marshall doing? I don't know. What's JP Tokuno doing? I want to see now. I'm not going to keep an eye on this. I want to know if they're going to bring in more UNC people, and I hope they do, because you know what? Maybe there's like some chemistry benefit to bringing in like six dudes at the end of your bench who all played in some common system. I don't know, but I feel like they've just gone from basic tanking to advanced tanking of let's just try to stack certain blocks of players together because we're getting bored because this rebuild will take like 17 years.
You know, the only get UNC guys thing, Jordan tried that for a while.
Yeah, it didn't work.
Yeah, they've actually gone.
Which for them means that it does work because they're just going to keep stacking more first round picks on.
I opened up the story because I was curious about what kind of contract he was getting. And a little part of that take will be obscured by a sound from a pop-up video. Bob, do you have a take?
Yeah, I have a take, which is that I don't know that that's the case, that they're just bored and now turning it into some kind of performance art. This is, to me, the same. You know, Totoko is a guy who has... You know, we saw some skill of his from the summer league. Marshall is the same, and he's the kind of, you know, big, good passing, awful defending point guard that they had in a much less athletic Michael Carter Williams. I think they're still following the exact same plan. And signing all these guys to the kind of non-guaranteed deals, the same thing they gave to KJ McDaniels, I think it's they're staying the course on this. I think the really interesting thing about the Sixers that we're all going to and honestly, one of them might be a smart signing, and whether they'll then take that contract and flip it, you know, remains to be seen. But the thing about the Sixers and all the people talking about, you know, all the pro Sixer and anti Sixer Jeremiahs, I think that's so very interesting. Is I do want to see what happens when they actually do start to put all their chips into the table and quote unquote go for it. Is this a stain you can't unbesmirch? Like, will the stink of being the Sixers and being sort of a collective known for this radical, we're going to be as awful as possible plan, which is really every team's rebuilding plan, just taken to the nth degree, is that a kind of thing that players are going to want to join in on? Or does it just take one homegrown superstar and that completely changes the dynamic? We don't know. But I'm actually interested to find out what the Sixers do. I don't like what the Sixers do. I don't like the sort of incredible, you know, sort of raw, unfettered capitalism and transactionalism that gets revealed by the way they operate. And maybe that's just a removing of mine or yours or anyone's delusions of what sports actually is. And no one likes to have their, you know, delusions revealed to them. But that's what the Sixers do. And I kind of hope it does work in a certain sense. That it isn't just, you know, some kind of horrible Ponzi scheme that they're running.
It's interesting that you mention KJ. First off, I signed you both 3 points. Good takes.
Very different variety. Bob went real analysis. Bob educated, brought the proceedings up a notch. I respect that.
Second, it's interesting you mentioned KJ McDaniels, because the offer they originally gave to I opened up the story to see what kind of contract it was, and then it popped up a bit, and I can't watch videos. Well, but anyway, the contract they originally offered McDaniels was one of those like 4-year, $2 million, 3-year team option deals, which is like literally the worst contract you can offer somebody in the NBA. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those like the thing about the Sixers is that it isn't just the tanking. Like, they're doing pretty much everything to as extreme a degree as you can possibly do. So like they'll offer somebody these like crazy insultingly low sheets where they have no control or dominion over their own career, and so, you know, somebody like McDaniels will say no, and it worked out for him. But I was wondering if Togedo's was like that too, but I couldn't tell.
I think it is.
I wonder if that's like the next frontier of, you know, it's the extension of the draft idea, which is that obviously a lot of guys go pro every year when they have no business going pro because they're like, oh, it'll work out for me. Even if I go second round, there's always a Gilbert Arenas who makes it out. And obviously they project that like 1 in 10,000 odds on themselves. I wonder if this is the next frontier of that, of, oh, well, KJ McDaniels cashed in on that screw your crappy terms of the second round. I'm betting on myself. And then a bunch of guys who maybe would have hacked in the league for 3 years in the bench are done in one because they just really overestimated their earning potential, which would be very sad.
I think personally that the Sixers screwed up on McDaniels. I think that – or like that what happened with McDaniels is the negative end of what can happen.
Where did McDaniels end up? Is he back in Houston?
Yeah, he got traded to Houston and he got.
Yeah, he was a free agent, and then I sort of lost track of him amidst the free agency.
He extended it in Houston.
There's an interesting story there. This was came out in a story that Spencer Hall wrote at SB Nation, which is a really beautiful story about college football and his own life growing up in poverty. And it's
fantastic.
Really beautiful, right? I haven't read it yet.
And he mentioned a stat he mentioned, which I'm pretty sure I'd read somewhere before, which is they've taken polls of college football players and asked them, well, do you think you have a chance to have a pro career? And 50% say yes.
Oh boy!
And the actual number is about 3%.
Like across end up all having so is that like any across kind of, all conferences or just like dudes in power conferences?
I think it was across all. I don't know.
Yeah, they didn't really specify. I would imagine. I got to imagine it's power conferences or like D1, let's say.
Yeah, because
like
but we're still D2 talking. Guys. Yeah, it's not like a D2 guy. This is like D1. I assume it was D1, but it's still we're talking about 3%. I mean, that 3% number is. You'd have to think they're talking about all D1 football, right?
Something to that effect. But I know where you're going with this because there's a second part to that.
Go for it. I'll tag off.
Well, the second part to that was, I thought that's where you're going with it. The number for basketball players who think they're going to make it is even higher. It's like some huge number. If it's like 50 for players, it's what, like 85 to 90? I mean, we don't have the article open in front of us, but NBA players are even more irrational about it than football players are, unfortunately.
It is probably easier to carve out a career in basketball.
Well, you can if you're talking about going to Europe and things like that.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of high-paying European American football leagues, although they are out there. Right. The thing that I was talking about is I mean I've said for a long time I think that the draft should be abolished. The draft should most definitely be abolished. Just as you know, and this isn't just a how to make better basketball kind of thing. I just think it's the idea that a laborer doesn't have a choice about where he would like to work is fundamentally ridiculous.
Didn't you write about this recently, Mike?
Eric Nussbaum and I had a debate on trades at Vice Sports. And basically, I mean, it was one of those deals where somebody had to argue pro trades, someone anti. So Eric argued anti. I argued basically, I was like, look, all these things like trades, free agency, draft, they're all spokes on the same terrible wheel. Like it's hard to isolate the part from the whole in some ways because, you know, okay, so you don't have the draft, but, you know, like controlling long-term contracts is, you know, crazy enough. Because my thing with trades was, you know, and like Eric was totally right on one level, and I didn't even disagree with the debate, is basically he was saying, look, it's you're trading people as human capital. That's terrible.
Yes.
And then my counter-argument was, okay, sure, it's awful, but let's say that you are the guy who signed like a 9-year deal and all of a sudden coach changes the system. And
you're Jose Reyes basically is what you're saying.
You're Jose Reyes. Or, you know, I use the example of like when you remember, Jose Reyes and Burley signing in Miami. That was my exact example.
Right.
And I was like, so you got hoodwinked by Jeff Loria and you now are stuck for the next 8 years of your career there. Like your life is, that's indentured servitude if you think about it.
But it is worth mentioning that when Reyes got traded, he took a big financial dent because he moved from Florida to Canada.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, it's all about when people say demand a trade, the fact that exists in the sports lexicon means that even though the rules are written to certain players, you know, written in the favor of the power brokers, it depends on the player. Like I think upper tier players can at least leverage it. But even then, like lower tier guys, like I think Markieff Morris is the exception. I haven't heard Markieff Morris is the first guy in a while who said it, who's been this adamant about I want out.
Yeah.
And everybody's like, you're not getting out. Whereas usually you hear about that and it's
20
like,
years
right,
ago it was a lot
out.
More common. Like you would hear 20 years ago, you would hear guys, all kinds of guys being like, get me the hell out of here in no uncertain terms.
Right.
I think this is part and parcel of not to go humping everything on the blame of the internet, but I think it is. I think as players have become far more market savvy, they've learned that like telling your favorite local beat reporter that you want out of here isn't a good idea anymore. And that there are ways to negotiate these things behind the scenes so you don't end up looking like the jerk who wants to leave Team X.
Oh, yeah. I remember, sorry to interrupt here. I don't know if you guys listened to Zach Lowe's podcast with Howard Beck, where they were just recalling all the old Kobe Shaq stories.
That was an excellent podcast.
It was an excellent podcast. And Howard Beck talking about the experience, like, you know, to your point, Bob, about how this just doesn't happen anymore. Like, Shaq demanded to be traded by calling up Howard Beck and whoever the LA Times beat writer was and be like, hey guys, this is Shaq. So, I'm demanding a trade. And he like just did a straight exclusive interview and that's how it was done. And it's just bizarre because it's like that was 10 years ago.
Howard
like,
Beck, if you're listening to this,
yeah.
You have an incredible Shaquille O'Neal impersonation.
He really is so much better than
Mike's
mine.
Mike's subpar, I gotta say.
Well,
that's my hot
like,
take.
Just hearing it next to Howard's was like, I'm sorry, Mike. It was just like.
I mean, that's a man who spent years of his life around Shaq. He should have a better one than me, but it's still subjectively good.
Bob, you were once a professional actor. What is your best Shaq impersonation?
Oh, that's good.
I don't have a good Shaq impersonation. I've never tried it. I don't want to just like throw it out there raw if I've never actually practiced a Shaq imitation.
Look, I understand you have respect for your own craft. All right, I assigned 3 points each to your takes.
I could do a Christopher Lloyd if that'll help.
No, thank you.
Okay.
Yahoo sources.
One more thing before we go to the next question. I think an interesting test case is the Josh Eustis thing, which is, I think, the most extreme example of this kind of strange draft shenanigans that were. It was kind of sort of. I mean, it got some heat on it, but it was. I thought it was really sleazy to take advantage of Josh Eustis, who may have been drafted in the second round, but maybe not, to get Josh Eustis a guaranteed deal, but then be able to agree to stash him at their D-League affiliate so that they could keep
the
pick.
The Thunder last year.
Yeah, I thought that was just awful.
Yeah,
I feel like Oklahoma City should have gotten a lot more hell for playing on Eustis's leveraging weakness, let's say, or his inability to have any leverage in this kind of a negotiation, because they had to have talked it over with him before they drafted him.
You'd think.
And that to me was just awful. Don't do that.
Here's the hottest thing I'm going to say today.
Oh.
When Durant leaves, that is going to be an ugly organization.
You think Durant is leaving?
Yeah. I think Durant's going to D.C. I think that's the only place he's going to go. He's going to D.C. or he's staying.
You keep missaying Knicks, and I don't know why that is. that was such a sad laugh of recognition. But yeah,
homie wants to play with Porzingis. Sounds great. Yeah,
dude, people love Porzingis. Except
it's preseason. Of course, they love Porzingis.
You think he's? You know, I think they'll be weirdly fine. I think. Look, you want to talk about? I think.
God, I brought up the Knicks.
Ugh. No, I'm not talking about the Knicks. I'm talking about Durant.
Oh.
No, my point is like, is he going to leave and is he going to DC? Yeah, I could definitely see it. But he's got freaking Russell Westbrook there. I mean, John Wall's great and all, don't get me wrong, but he's not Russell Westbrook.
I think they will probably have a down year this year. I think that they're.
Really?
Yeah.
They're really? I think the other ones, I think they're going to be hot. I think they're going to.
Their supporting cast is really bad. Like,
Oklahoma City?
Yeah. Like obviously Ibaka's great, but like,
Dude, Ibaka and Cantor together are just a perfect match.
No, they're not. Cantor's bad.
Like
Cantor's bad. Cantor's
not,
not
like
good.
Cantor. I like Cantor in maybe like a 15-minute a night capacity.
They're
otherwise,
they're paying him a lot more than that.
Yeah,
yeah,
like,
I know.
Cantor makes entirely too much money to like.
Cantor is a liability on defense for years. The way, not to bring it back to the Knicks, the way Amari Stoudemire was a liability on defense.
No, I mean
such that, you know, they were the Knicks, like even during Amari's like half season of All Star dominance with the Knicks are actually pretty much about the same team with or without him. That's how bad Amari was on defense.
Sure, but I mean, well, I guess you're talking about the circa, you know, Tyson.
Like,
because I was gonna say, I mean, the whole idea is obviously. You know,
no, without Tyson. Before Tyson showed up, the D'Antoni Knicks.
I was going to say, I mean, obviously,
Landry Fields Knicks.
The conceit is that, you know, Ibaka covers for him on defense, and then on offense, Ibaka chills by the 3-point line and spaces, and Cantor bangs inside and scores, which I think he does pretty well. I wouldn't pay the money that he got paid for it, but I think it's a really good fit for him as opposed to Utah, which was just not going to work because Favors can't do anything on offense. It's not inside, you know, the circle.
I think you don't need post scoring. When Durant is as efficient as he is.
Yeah, I don't know if you want Cantor clogging up the lane with Westbrook and Durant attacking from the perimeter.
I have a lot of very negative opinions about him.
But that said, I think they're going to be really fucking good.
Yeah,
pardon
I mean,
my friend.
I just thought it was very interesting that they made the switch that they made now because, like, look, nobody's going to stand for Scott Brooks. I mean, he's not a good coach. But at the very least, you knew that they loved Scott Brooks.
Oh, and yeah, I forgot about Brooks.
And so, yeah. And so if you're canning him now, I mean, to me, the move, it would have been nefarious as shit to do this, though. But the move to me would have been you roll the dice that they get to, you know, a healthy Thunder team, shows enough progress this year that Durant's like, okay, I'll stay. the second that deal is signed, you just can Scott Brooks and move on. Because right now,
Mike, he got fired.
I know he did, but I'm saying what I would have done is I would have kept him for this year because you're rolling the dice on Billy Donovan, A, getting along with everybody, and B, being a good NBA coach, and nobody knows.
Yeah, the Billy Donovan move points to them having the sinking sensation that that Durant is gone no matter what they do this year. That's what that move
points to. That could be it. I mean, yeah, maybe that's probably the logical conclusion. My logic was that if you feel like if you're not assuming that off the bat, then at the very least, the known quantity with Scott Brooks is that at least the players like him, as dumb as he is tactically. Yeah. This case, we don't even know if they like Billy or if Billy can translate to the NBA.
Yeah.
Also, Deion Waiters is on the Thunder. So.
just provokes laughter. That's all it
who
is.
Did who did Oklahoma City bring in besides this offseason? I know they signed. They know they re-upped Cantor, but did they bring anybody else in? It's still Waiters, and I know they lost.
They re-upped Singler. I mean, he was the other part of that.
Deal. Right. Oh, yeah. I like that. That was a good deal.
I enjoyed that.
Yeah, Singler's a good player.
They drafted someone who I feel like can help them in the first round that I don't remember. This is a problem. But that's a problem. Like, what do you like? I mean, I generalize, and so I focus on like six sports. So that anything, if there's an off season, I forget everything from the season before within like a month and a half. Because the second the NBA ended, I've been on baseball and like college football constantly. So I couldn't even tell you. Like, basically, the whole DeAndre thing didn't help my comprehension of the NBA off season because I just went in a downward spiral after that. But I don't remember a damn thing.
Mike's a Mavs fan, for anybody who doesn't know.
Yeah.
It's a sad life.
Mike, what sport do you write about that you know the least about?
As like column-wise or feature-wise? Because you write a feature. Okay, yeah. Because I was going to say, I mean, I did an MMA feature earlier this summer.
Because I can do a feature.
Yeah, yeah. you talk to someone. I've written a couple of tennis columns, and I know like the top five. That's essentially, I mean, I wrote a Nadal column because I knew Nadal, and I wrote a Djokovic thing. I don't write regularly about tennis.
Oh, yeah, you wrote a Djokovic thing I disagreed with.
Yeah, you're a Djokovic guy.
I love Djokovic.
And then before that, I wrote a Nadal thing. That was what prompted the Djokovic thing. So that's probably the one. I don't do it very often. But I don't know. I mean, I guess like that would be the one. I follow a lot of stuff. I mean, that's kind of my thing. I get bored easily, so I follow a lot of different things. So if I write about hockey, that'll be the answer. Cause I'm what the NHL needs. I'm like a super casual hockey fan.
I wrote a thing last year about my total bandwagon Rangers fandom.
Ah, nice. That's like,
I was a big Ranger fan in the 1980s and then lost interest sometime after that. I didn't even really pay attention to like the Mark Messier Rangers. My favorite player was this random goaltender named Eddie Mio, who was a journeyman goaltender. Like, went for the oil. He was back up with the Oilers and the Red Wings, and had in my memory was a dominant year and a half with the Rangers. But looking back at his stats, he was a total mediocre goaltender. But my childhood memory of him was like the greatest thing since Ken Dryden. And anyway, I wrote a bandwagon fandom of being excited about the Rangers because they were winning, and then I actually hit up Eddie Mio on Twitter and interviewed him. And that was, it just blew, I love that so much. I mean, I know very little about hockey, but getting to talk to Eddie Mio just blew me away.
That's so cool.
Yahoo sources.
Takes.
Free agent guard Dante Jones, Brooklyn, reach agreement on a deal. Bob.
Yeah.
Your take.
I'm gonna lay this one down, man. Michael. I got nothing about Dante Jones.
Michael,
I'm inspired.
Some points
because Dante Jones came into the league. I don't look at the numbers, but he came into the league like 2004 or something. It's been a long time for Dante, and if it hasn't been that long, then it feels that long. But I kind of like the fact that the guy is getting work. You know, I feel like we just sit here and we talk about like the best dudes of the NBA, but we forget that like Dante Jones could just dust like 99% of the people on the planet. Like, my buddy was working, was covering the Drew League this summer and saw, 39-year-old Katino Mobley with a Smurf beard, and Katino was destroying people at 39. So, like, I like the fact that Dante Jones is just, like, basically, like, you hear about, like, a working journalist or you hear about, like, a working actor. He's a working NBA player. He comes in, he gets his gigs. It may not work and last, but he's still hustling and hanging out. And I don't know. That's just kind of inspiring, man. I dig the fact that, like, that dude, like, what do you think of when you think of Dante Jones? I remember him being good defensively. I may be wrong. I don't have stats in front of me. And like, I've got nothing else. I think he went to Duke. I don't know. But the fact that we've been doing this for 10 years with Dante Jones, working NBA millionaire. Respect. I got a lot of respect for Dante Jones. I got a lot of respect for the Nets for, you know, bringing him in and keeping him around.
I like a guy who doesn't retire.
What else? Going. Yeah.
What are you going to do? I'm with it.
Cool.
All right. Yahoo sources.
Wait, do I get points?
What are the points we get?
Oh, sorry. Bob, you got one. And Mike, I give you three. I thought that was a good take.
Thank you.
It's a good take. We're all tied.
I think we are.
Yahoo sources.
Just by the way, Dante Jones evidently went to, I think, Northeast Mississippi Community College is the name.
Oh shit! I totally thought he went to Duke.
Yeah, I'm going to the Wikipedia for this one. I did not know that.
Went to JC.
Went to Duke.
No, not a Duke guy. There was a couple of Dante Joneses, or maybe this is the wrong. No, that's the other Dante Jones. I got the wrong Dante Jones. Wait a second. This is confusing.
Here goes the rabbit hole.
There were at least two Dante Joneses. There was one guy who got drafted.
I know a certain sports writer who coined the phrase Wikipenis about 40 minutes ago. And I think that's what you're doing, right? I think that's your game on Wikipedia.
Yeah, you're kind of being a Wikipenis right now, Bob.
Damn, that's an East Coast burn.
Yeah. I think we just told an inside joke. Yahoo sources. Free agent guard Kendall Marshall finalizing multi-year deal with the Philadelphia 76ers.
Do we have to do this one? I feel like we kind of
covered the Sixers, man.
Fair enough.
I'm docking you 1 point, Corbin.
Thank you. You're on the red. There is one specific random ass Woj free agent signing for like the last couple weeks I'm hoping you bring up.
Okay. Thrilled to announce the hiring of Shams Charina, best young basketball reporter on the planet, to our NBA coverage team at Yahoo Sports. Bob.
There was I'm trying to think about who wrote this. It was a really angry piece I don't think it was Woj going off on a rant, because I feel like that's so off brand for him. But some writer went off on a rant about like these kids today all trying to make it in the biz by breaking, you know nothing, pointless stories. And there are a lot of them, and I follow a lot of these random accounts where you see, you know, where some kid will announce a sort of a beneath Woj level signing. So let's call it a nameless person like Bunker Blast or something. And some writer, oh gosh, I got to remember who else. This is a bad take. Said like, you're not part of this game, man. If you think that like you're going to be able to make a career out of like dispensing meaningless information about who signs with like what Russian league team, and was like really angry about it. And he wasn't like a breaking sources guy. He's more of a beat columnist guy, not a Mariotti type, but certainly not Mariotti.
No, I'm with you. Like a guy who works for a newspaper is kind of a reporter, but is really.
Yeah. And he went off on this insane rant, and there's this fascinating defensiveness to these kids who are just, you know, culling through random transactions pages from the Europeans leagues and trying to do it. I'm not saying that Shams is that, although I remember like all of like the every time I'm like, oh, who does that guy sign with? Where did he go? It's Shams who managed to like dispel that information. And it's always fascinating to me to watch, you know, as someone who quote unquote got this kind of a job without any legit newspaper experience, without going to J school or anything like that, and finding it a very strange, unnavigable path. It's always interesting to me when more established reporters are threatened by that, or are angry about that, or feel like it's somehow cheating. Now, granted, I've got a lot of skin in the game for skipping any kind of traditional route to employment in media. And as a tenuous freelancer, I don't even know if I can call it that. But that hostility is to me, I guess I'll leave it as fascinating, and I certainly understand where it's coming from. And again, I don't want to target whoever this person. I'm kind of glad I can't remember what was said, because I don't want to throw this him or her under the bus, because I understand that kind of fear and resentment, and I think it's natural and kind of human in a way, if oddly misplaced.
Mike,
that was a serious take.
I'm going to leave this up to Corbin. Do you want me to respond? I don't have a take on Shams. I have no idea who he is. So right. If you want to move on to the next thing,
you get one point.
We can do 1 point, or like we can have a discussion off of Bob's discussion, but that's like a sports media thing, and we totally do not have to do that. So you decide, Corbin. Do I take the 1 point, or you want to hear some conversation off of Bob's very well raised
points? Is it all right if I stop it in 2 minutes?
Sure.
Okay.
We'll do the lightning round thing. I mean, I think Bob said the right word, which is insecurity, because like I haven't been doing it like that long. I mean, I'm 28, but I think I've done enough varied things in that I write long form features and I write think pieces and I blog and I've been on a beat and I've done a lot of different stuff that probably most things aren't investigative to some degree. There are a lot of people who do all those things much better than me. I've just dabbled at a decently high level on a bunch of them. And it's just like insecurity everywhere. And like, you know, I think the people trash that guy because they're like, oh, you break pointless news. Well, this is more important. Or, you know, you get people who trash like people who write think pieces, like, you know, and it's like, oh, you're not reporting, it's not important. And look, it's all important, okay? Like, there are people who do things good and bad, but every part of it is important and every part of it is difficult. Because, like, I feel like, too, the other backlash is a lot of people who don't see the importance of beat writers. If you're on it every day, dude, it's hard trying to be around and get stories.
I could not do that job. I'm so impressed by people who do the beat thing well.
It's all really hard, but because like people are threatened and afraid that something they don't do is taking over, they just take shots at each other. And it's like, I don't know, like just everybody get along and respect the fact that like it's all useful. Like there's no counterculture without a mainstream. Like the people who are writing really good think pieces who shit on beat writers, they can't write those pieces without the beat writer doing the basic coverage. And the beat writer who's sitting there saying that those guys don't report don't mean anything, well, they're writing more nuanced stuff than you are because they have more time and, you know, maybe ability than you do. It's all useful. Like, let's just all get along, you know? If you do shit work and don't try to do good work, that doesn't depend on Medium. That depends on your lack of effort or skill.
Yeah. I mean, I understand the resentment because it feels like, great, I've, you know, again, like the number of hours it takes to put out some random, like, gamer about, a Bucks Hawks game in the middle of February that no one cares about. Like, there's a lot of work that goes into generating that. Mm-hmm. And some kid who's like, I know someone who works in the PR office of the Spanish league, and so I got this tip, feels like you spent 5 minutes and now you have a job. And I understand that frustration. Of course, you know, developing that source is a good thing to have, and knowing someone who works in the office of a Spanish league team, and the beat guys know guys in the front office of other teams, and that's how they get information. I think you're right.
Yeah, because the thing is that, like, those people can make the counterpoint to you, and they're totally right of, like, your phone's on 24 hours a day. Like, I don't think Woj sleeps. I don't know how you could when you're in that line of work. And that's just maybe the one individual, like, the thing you're putting out are bite-sized nuggets, but it takes every available hour of your consciousness to be near your phone and cultivate that information. And that's just exhausting right there. So it's all hard. I don't know. I mean, good luck to Shams. I honestly have no idea who he is.
Yeah. I mean, look, he's a guy who breaks news and he does a good job of it as far as I've seen him.
I mean,
great.
Yeah. If you're working you're working with Woj and Mark Spears, you clearly can bring it. So good for him.
Yeah.
All right, we're done.
Unless he's a sham.
Oh,
come on, that's, man. No. That was terrible.
You can take away points for a bad
point. That was...
I'll take that hit.
All right. Bob, you got 2 points. Mike, you got 3.
All right. Wow. I knew punning would cost me sooner or later.
I'm docking for puns today. All right. Yahoo Source. Free agent guard Landry Fields undergoes hip surgery. Bob.
Oh, Bob's got to have it.
I've gone like first the last 3 times in a row, just so you know.
Oh, you have?
Yeah, I think he has. I think it's on me.
That's another point off for Corbin. -2.
God, I'm doing a terrible job. Mike!
Yeah, you are.
What is your Landry Fields take?
My Landry Fields take is, I mean, fuck, man. I don't know. I feel bad, but I don't feel bad because the dude basically was given the greatest golden handshake in NBA history. Just, you know, it's not really a golden handshake if you're just like an elaborate pawn in a negotiation scheme for an aging Canadian point guard. But like, yeah, like, do I feel bad? Sure. Do I worry about his employment prospects to be like my dude Dante Jones? A little bit. But then, like, you know, the amount of effort relative to compensation for Landry for the last several years. I mean, that dude's agent should – very rarely am I like, you know what? Agents deserve more of a commission. That dude's agent deserves a commission because that was a genius, genius piece of financial transaction ship right there. I feel like such a stand for praising an agent. But, I mean, my God, he got paid for so little. So I hope you heal, Landry. But if you don't, I don't feel bad for you as I would for other people because you have a nice Stanford degree and you got paid really well for your last deal.
I have a couple of thoughts about Landry Fields. First is, I was so pro Landry Fields in like 2010. I think I compared him at one point in writing on a blog to John Havlicek.
Whoa!
In retrospect, I was not right.
He's not John Havlicek?
I think history has proven that Landry Fields is not as good as John Havlicek.
I will say this. People do forget, like, when I say things like what I did in Landry Fields, people forget that Landry's first year was good.
Yeah, it was really good.
He averaged 10 points. He shot 40% from three, 7 rebounds, playing small forward at like 29 minutes a game. He was a good defensive player his entire career.
I forgot about the rebounding. Like, he was a spectacular rebounder.
Spectacular rebounder. He had this habit of just like pulling the Michael Jordan and sneaking in to dunk back in a missed free throw. That was so awesome every single time he would do it. He was deadly. He was the best. I was freaking out about the Melo trade because I thought they were going to throw Landry Fields in. And Danilo, I was like happier that they tell Danilo Gallinari, who I love, than Landry Fields, because I thought Landry Fields' potential was that great. I was wrong. And also, it's just to be noted that Landry Fields has an unimaginably hot woman that married him. So if any pity that you had have for Landry Fields, mitigate that by the fact that, like, yeah, but his unbelievably gorgeous supermodel wife is there to help him nurse through his pain. But Landry Fields made what I'm assuming is a joke tweet the other day. And it was a tweet about that he never knew what the word POTUS, the acronym POTUS, stood for until someone on his Twitter feed explained it.
Not very Stanford.
Yeah, and I was like, nice Stanford education there, brah. But
in fairness to Landry, it took me a while to figure out too.
Yeah, and he said, like, and the
but they don't teach that at the University of Hard Knocks, Corbin.
They don't teach you that on the streets.
He was like, he said, like, just learned what POTUS means. I'm paraphrasing your tweet, Mr. Fields, if you are listening to this. I just learned what that means. Someone on my timeline explained it to me. I hope I'm still an American. And it was one of those moments where I really wanted to tweet at Landry Fields something like, yeah, you're still an American. You're a complete moron. Or something, like, really mean. Like,
man, that would have been mean.
Woof.
Yeah. Yeah. That was another East Coast burn.
From
a real
Bob. I did like how you started off that you know, your I guess observations on Landry. It was kind of the tone that like Rick Riley would take on like Lance Armstrong. Like, you know, you're sitting there, like he's sitting there, he's like, I believed him when he said that he wasn't on, you know, when he wasn't cheating. I was wrong. Yeah. He looked at me in the face and said this, and I was wrong. You're sitting there and you're like, I compared it to John Havlicek. Obviously, I was wrong.
I thought
that we should have traded. We should have prioritized, you know, him over Gallo. Obviously, yeah. I was wrong.
I'm going to end this with a golf story. I follow many athletes' Twitter feeds. It's sort of a job description, and I don't know how that's the case, but it is. And Landry Fields's are just like, it's things that Landry Fields thinks are funny, like that POTUS joke, and affirmational Bible phrases, and it just all feels so fake. And what connection this has to him not being John Havlicek, I will never know. But Landry Fields' Twitter feed is depressing in a way that I can't even really begin to articulate, in that it just feels so cheerily phony. And like, not that his Twitter feed should be like filled with like moments of staring into the abyss of nothingness and death, but it just like, I know the smell of something that's false when I see it, and his perpetual sunniness mixed with like muscular Christianity just really bugs me. It just bugs me.
Maybe he thinks it's good for his brand. I mean, that's what I'm on this podcast. It's good for my brand.
He may very well like Clay Anthony Early is another one of my Twitter follows, and he's fun because he starts off every morning with like, you know, I forget what it is. It's this particular phrase about like, the day is here, ready to attack it. And it's been getting like later and later in the day that he says.
6:59 p.m. Day's here, it's ready like, to attack it.
Day's here, ready to go, ready to get at it, guys.
Blessed or something like that, and that's always the first tweet, some variation of that, and I've been seeing it at like 2 in the afternoon sometimes.
Live every day like it's your last, guys. Oh my god.
That would have been a great thing for like AI in his playing career, like just tweeting that, because like all the stories about him going out to like 9 a.m. and then sleeping for like 40 minutes and like starting his workout like 2 hours before game time.
Hey, man,
like that would have been awesome just to like be like, oh, guess AI really wasn't prepping much before he dropped 80 against the Bucks tonight. You know?
Are you guys aware of the Mike Trout Twitter thing?
No. Like the weather thing?
Trout Twitter thing?
Yeah, the weather thing.
Yeah. I knew that.
Okay. Mike Trout tweets about the weather all the time, and if you look at the people he follows, it's like there's like 100 people who just tweet about like arcane weather stuff.
Yeah, no, Jeff Passan, who's Woj's, I guess, Yahoo baseball counterpart, did like the feature on that. It was really, really interesting. It was interesting mostly because like that's the first interesting thing I've heard about Mike Trout.
Yeah, he's so not interesting.
No, and he's like going to be the greatest baseball player of all time. And like it's been 5 years. He should have like four MVPs. And that's the first interesting thing I know.
He's just like a weird brick man.
Oh, my favorite thing is when they were in like the best anecdote was they were in Phoenix for spring training. And you heard about Storm and Flagstaff, which is like a 3-hour drive, give or take, from Phoenix. And he straight up drove like after spring training one day to go watch a thunderstorm in Flagstaff. Just that night, and then drove back and worked out the next day. Who? That's weird. That's real weird. But I'm glad I know this about him.
You guys read the David Foster Wallace thing, the tennis, not the Federer tennis article that he wrote, but the one he wrote,
the string theory one.
Yeah, the string theory.
I have not.
Is it the memoir one or the one about that rando?
It's the one about the rando.
Yeah, the rando. Yes, I've read it. I read both.
Yeah,
but...
which you know, yeah, it's really you know, it's like I think it's true, but you're pointing out to like finding ways and time for athletes to do things that are not boring is really asking a lot of them, you know. And I know I realize I'm kind of contradicting my Landry Fields' Twitter feed is filled with like sappy, inane, faux religious like nothingness, which I may be doing that right now, but like. The amount of time, effort, dedication that has gone into an entire life to get to this point. It's your point that you were making about Dante Jones being better, like in the 99th percentile of all basketball playing humans on the planet. And, you know, we'll call him a scrub, which is just ridiculous. Yep. But, you know, the point he makes is like the dedication and the monk-like devotion that athletes have to have, even in the context of Iverson's late night carousing, is so superhuman what we ask them to do. And then to like say like, okay, and now craft an interesting life outside of that. That seems to me to it's almost like it's kind of awful on our part for us to want them to have lives that are more than sports and to demand that they be well-rounded people, because the thing that got them here is in a lot of cases not having this like even a moment of oxygen to be a well-rounded person.
Well, I think like I completely get that. I go back and forth because I think like that's one line of thinking, and the other line of thinking is that because the AAU system is what it is, and because people are ranking athletes earlier and earlier than ever, and now in football it's 7-on-7, that's basically the AAU equivalent, and they're starting younger and younger. Is it that it's impossible for them to do it and it's an unfair expectation, or that they're just enabled at such an early age that it's completely okay and encouraged to only do this one thing, that they never like themselves develop any interest because they just aren't like they almost are like told that thinking for themselves is a detriment to their career. We see it in the NFL more than we do than basketball in some ways.
Yeah, we do. I mean, well, that was the point of the Wallace article, that, you know, he was this player was playing tennis from the moment he was, you know, like two and old enough to be able to like barely lift a racket. And the line of like and has been doing nothing but that since then. Nothing. Mm-hmm. In order to get to the ranking he was, which like topped out, I think, at like in the mid 60s before his career was over. And, you know, there's no choice there. The guy himself will tell you that he loves tennis. But how do you call it a choice when that choice was made for you before you could even begin to develop the brain capacity to understand what a choice might be? It's almost a category mistake. And I think, and, you know, look, NBA players do that too. And you're right. You know, the AAU system in the middle of this is gets started earlier, and that's before we even get into, you know, European soccer leagues, which function a lot more like tennis world does.
Well, like, there's
think that at a certain point that you probably have enough agency that you'll rebel against it one way or the other. Like you'll either you'll either deny the amount of work that it takes, or you'll, I don't know.
I think if, like, the one reason why I don't, like, trust that's always hold true is because there's a lot of institutional pressure on a lot of them from their families or, like, socioeconomic conditions. And so it's like, you don't have a choice because we're all depending on you to get us out.
Right. Yes. Yes. I mean, but I think my point is, like, look, I would never criticize an athlete for not, although I just did, criticize an athlete for not being the kind of interesting person that
I don't
I
think
was
these are
like
strong that. Takes, Bob. You're really waffling on the old machine.
I know.
If you were on First Take right now, Skip would plow you right over.
God, Bob, your nuance, that doesn't help takes. God.
I think First Take should be me arguing with me. I think that would be First Take.
It's like that Rick James thing on Chappelle's show. Oh, I wouldn't just dry my feet in Eddie's couch. It's a real stupid thing to do. Why would I do that? Hell yeah, I just grow my feet in Eddie's couch.
But yeah, I think it's a very tough to your Rick Jamesian point, or my Rick Jamesian point. Yeah, I think the nature of what sports demands makes it look hard. To expect them to be people in a lot of ways. And when athletes are interesting people, like, say, you know, even your Brooke Lopez's or your Robin Lopez's or any of your Lopez's, you know, who have quirky seemingly interests outside of basketball, even if, you know, it's we're all sort of like, yeah, that should be the norm. But I think it's almost hard to expect that.
It's more common in a big man. In basketball, I think. Somebody who has outside interests.
This is a scorching hot take.
I think that there's sort of
like you're Larry Sanders who enjoys certain skateboarding and designing skateboards and certain recreational substances.
Please, we don't call it a recreational substance on this podcast.
I'm sorry, your mind expanding, religious plant.
You. Your health food, Bob. It's basically health food. All right, ready?
Corbin Smith is the Timothy Leary of the sports blogging world. There's my hot take.
I mean, look, I'm not going that deep.
How many points did we get for this meandering, nuanced conversation that led nowhere?
You both got
I think
three.
Zero
you
all
both got
around.
Three. You know what? That's not a bad point. I might need to give you -1. That just got that got really expansive.
Yeah,
I wrapped up my Landry take.
All right,
two.
Bob gets -1. Mike gets 3.
Woo! Wow. That's gonna burn. That's gonna leave a mark. I'm gonna have to get. I'm
time for some shit hot stuff right there.
Yahoo sources. Euroguard Marcelo Hoyos.
Yes, this is the one.
Agrees to 1-year deal with the Los Angeles Lakers. Now, apparently, I shortchanged Mike at some point, so we're going to start with Mike again, who seems to have some intense feelings on the topic.
Here's my intense feeling on this topic. I know nothing about this man, but I am 100% for it because I want more Marcelos in sports. Let's make America great with Marcelos, because we don't even have enough Marcells, right? Like, I was thinking about how many Marcells do we have in sports. I came up with Marcel Reese, fullback for the Oakland Raiders. I'm sure there's a Canadian hockey player out there. What did we get Marcells? Marcelo Zuna, Miami Marlins, but that's with 2 L's, not with 1 L, like the dude Marcelo spells it. So the fact that we're already taking one name, we're like, damn, there's a real paucity of Marcells. And if you don't agree with this, then, I mean, screw you, man, because I'm all about that. And then you add the Spanish version, our dude Marcelo Huerta. Is it Huerta or Huertas?
There is an S at the end. I'm not a Spanish
Marcelo speaker. He's not Spanish, you know, dude.
What is he then? Yes, I think he is.
No, he's Brazilian. In Barcelona.
He's Brazilian. He plays in Spain, but he's Brazilian.
I'm pretty sure the H is like that, you know, is silent either way.
I'll look it up. Keep talking.
But anyways, I am vehemently pro this because I want more Marcelos in my life. I'm pulling for this dude. We need more interesting nomenclature by all means. You know, like, no, let's not, you know, let's make space for the Marcelos of the world. Let's change the game. I'm in.
He's Brazilian.
Full stop.
He's Brazilian.
Cool. Well, I still think it's Huerta.
Because of that factual error, I will address Bob 1 point.
No, I didn't say he was. Did I say he was Spanish?
And I will take one away.
Yeah, you did.
And you said he was Spanish. I will take one away. That will not rate on how I rate the actual take.
Okay, fair.
But that factual error, we can't let that go. This is not a.
It's true. This is a thinking man's sports podcast.
Exactly. This is a.
I understand. I mean, I don't want to lower the high bar that we have here.
Yeah, please.
But I mean,
it's around the horn for intellectuals.
And indeed, and this is the thing.
That's the lowest rated show on ESPN8 you could ever imagine.
And listen, if we're to hold myself, and I completely agree with this, to, you know, a factual standard, we should hold the NBA to a nomenclature standard and try to raise their standards with names like Marcelo. That's all I'm saying.
Bob.
Yeah.
Do you have a take?
I'm trying to think. Do I really have a take?
It looks like that he's occasionally called Marcelinho.
Oh.
Yes, he is.
Oh.
Yeah.
Now who's the Wikipenis?
Me. I'm the Wikipenis. You're right. He has an Instagram profile. All right, what's your...
I'm going to pass. I'm going to pass. And, like, I'm just going to say me calling you a Wikipenis is my take and correcting Mike's.
All right.
Anyone with a Latin-sounding name is from Spain category mistake.
All right, we're going to dock 1 point for Bob because he hurt my feelings. And we're going to add...
God damn it!
Three for Mike. I'm looking at his Instagram page right now.
Uh-huh.
I'm not seeing anything... That's stoking a good conversation, though. It looks...
My favorite summer Instagram page, though, was Boris Dio.
Yeah, he's the best. Yeah, Boris has the best.
Boris is the king of, look at all the beautiful summer places I've been. Let me smirk knowingly into the camera in front of yet another gorgeous locale. I don't know if you know this, but I'm Boris Dio, and I am the most interesting... summer vacationing NBA player.
I mean, what was the that fits in line with the Lee Jenkins anecdote of what, like, he walked in and, like, you know, just got,
oh,
like...
it's the great story of it that they were doing testing when they were working out Dio before the draft, before they even drafted. I think it's before they drafted him. Could be wrong, but they were showing, they were, you know, they're doing the test that you see if you've ever watched the NBA combine.
The leaping thing.
It's a vert
the leaping thing with the cards. And he walked in holding an espresso, wearing flip-flops.
It was so great.
And they told him, like, and he's like, so what's the highest anyone has ever done?
And it was Amari, and Amari had cleared the bar.
And Amari had tested out the highest, clearly wearing, you know, basketball shoes and not sipping espresso. And he just sort of, like, hands someone the coffee and jumps up and beats Amari's record and then takes his coffee back and goes, in, like, the most Gallic way possible.
He is the most French NBA player.
Yeah,
just
goes,
like,
that was not difficult to
he probably just shotgunned, like, four clears before that too, let's be honest.
Look, if you were eating French food, I as someone who lived in Paris and gave in 2 years and probably gained like 25 pounds over those 2 years, it's really hard not to. The food is super good. And in most cases, they put butter on everything. Even eclairs. You can get butter on pretty much anything there, and it makes it better.
You can get butter on something that already has butter in it.
You really can. There's a sandwich, my favorite sandwich at the local cafe. It's a place called Café Jeannette. And every day when I walked in, the owner would say to me, and I'll say it first in French because it's really good in French. He'd go, hey, bonjour, Amelo, comment ça va ton président? Toujours en train de chercher la guerre. Which translates to, hello, slur for American. How is your president? Always looking for war.
When was this?
And it was the year 2000. It was pre 9/11.
Oh God.
Bonjour, Merlok, comment ça va ton président? Toujours en train de chercher la guerre. Every single time, like, you could set your clock by it, and I'd be like, it's not really my president, but I didn't vote for him, and yeah, you're right. I got nothing. But anyway, they had a great sandwich there, which was a sandwich liette. And what it was an entire baguette covered with pate, and like a good rustic peasant pork pate. In between two really serious helpings of butter between it. So it was like a
It was like a pig fat nestled between a cow fat sandwich. And it was delicious, and it was 10 francs, or like $1.50. And that was my dinner a lot of the time. It was super
good. When the Olympics come to Vancouver, Washington, we need to get the French to bring that in for concessions. That's all I'm saying.
I have no skin in this game. I do not eat meat.
Really?
Yeah, I'm a vegetarian.
No. That's a lot of discipline. I respect that. I don't have that discipline.
I'm like super fat. Like I eat like cake. I love cake and like cookies, but like anyway.
Not meat.
But
two more.
Do you cookies two without more. Wait, so you're not a vegan, right? So
I'm not a vegan.
Okay. So you could just get a baguette with butter on both sides.
Yeah,
and it would
good.
Still be super good.
That sounds good.
And it's still super terrible for you.
Yeah. And they
you
by
could
the
have
way,
a heart attack with the rest of us. We don't discriminate.
My favorite part of that sandwich is not only was it like pork pate in between butter, is that they used salted butter. And then they would add more salt.
It's a disgusting
there are the
country.
Other my
disgusting
other favorite
country.
My other favorite
I'm turning
thing
on it.
Was this thing called a sandwich grec, or a Greek sandwich. And again, it was also a baguette, not like the long skinny one, but like a, you know, like a hero-shaped type baguette.
Okay.
Stuffed with like hero meat. And then it was some little lettuce and some tomatoes, like a lot of like lamb meat. And then a lot of mayonnaise and a cream sauce. Like I think a yogurt type cream sauce, and then just a giant fistful of fries right in the sandwich.
Oh my god! How do we a fatter country than them still with all of
I
that
don't,
like on the
don't,
menu?
I don't know. I gained a ton of weight there. I gained a ton of weight, and I was like, "How are all you people skinny? You're eating the same things I am."
It's amazing.
Maybe they are an entire country that does secret shame exercise.
Yeah, maybe they're all just like bulimics and nobody told me.
Oh, wow. That would be horrible. I hope, France, if that's the case, you guys need to get it together.
No body shaming. I don't like body shaming. It's cool. We love
you. Oh, yeah, but bulimia. Bulimia.
Well, that's the point. Like, I'm saying, like, don't body shame yourself to, like, you know, look skinnier or something.
Yeah. Right,
I'm anti-bulimia. I'm not standing for bulimia. Jesus.
That's, and thus, we have found the hottest take.
Yeah. Bulimia is good.
That's all. That's all negative 18 points you need in one take. Not arguing this.
Two more. Listen. I have two more.
Okay. Go for it. I got to catch up. I got to come up with something good, man.
All right.
Although I think I should get one. I want my point back for correcting him on the Brazilian Marcelo Huertas thing.
Yeah, you're neutral for that because you got the 1 point and then you got the negative.
No,
one
I gave
point.
You the point for that, Bob. I just took it away because after that you were mean to me.
Yeah. So how is that equal negative one?
He's saying the negative one came after the one.
I have the sheet here, and I'm writing down the scores, and we're going to add
them
up at the
end. Give me a point for
end.
Some French food stories.
If you want a point, you can give a take.
I'm grade grubbing.
Look,
I'm grade grubbing.
I should be taking away points for how profoundly and significantly you have drug us off course with your thoughts about French baguettes. Sir.
At long last.
We call that
Yahoo Sources. Likelihood is that free agent Carlos Boozer waits for NBA season to start, sees where a need and fit develops with playoff team. Bob!
Yeah, what's up?
What's your take?
Carlos Boozer's an asshole. Fuck Carlos Boozer.
5 points! Mike!
My favorite Carlos Boozer was Carlos Boozer circa, five, when he started spray painting his hairline. Do you guys remember that? That was a thing
yes.
that he...
Yeah.
He did it. He didn't stop that. It still popped up from time to time where you'd be like, Carlos Boozer's hair seems to be back.
Darren does it too, and they were on the team at the same time.
I mean, I watched a decent amount of Laker games last year being out here, and like he definitely didn't do it last year. And like I feel like that whole thing should turn into like a pro wrestling storyline where Boozer's waiting and Boozer's waiting and Boozer's waiting, and somebody gets hurt, and they're like, well, who are we starting at power forward? And Boozer comes out and the hair, like he's got the spray painted hairline full stop. It's like when Hollywood Hogan would go from like Hulk Hogan to Hollywood Hogan, depending on what angle it needed to do. That's what I want. Oh, Boozer come out and like do it for like, what's the like least likable NBA team right now? Like He needs to come out for
the Lakers.
Team.
It's always the Lakers.
Yeah, yeah, but now I'm not, like, least
no,
like,
no, the Lakers. Boots. Lakers are too janky and weird now to be.
Yeah,
if
no,
you
no,
like,
I want,
look,
like,
if you like Nick Young, they're janky and weird. But I don't care for the Nick Young thing.
No. This needs to be like stick with the pro wrestling storyline here. It's got to be like
the least hated team. I think it's the Clippers.
Yes. Oh, perfect. And the Clippers have like no big man depth. So like,
and Doc Rivers still thinks it's 2009, so he probably thinks Boozer is still pretty good.
100%. So this is how this needs to play out. They need to be like in a tailspin. We need to have like, you know, like one of those deals. Like, you know, I'm not wishing injury on Blake Griffin, but like, let's say he's out for like a week, and like it's a tight seating race, and they're just like, oh God, what the hell are we gonna do? We can't start Spencer Hawes, and then all of a sudden, like Boozer comes out of the tunnel, full hair spray paint mode. How's
Spencer Hawes ended up? Is he back on the Clippers?
No, he got traded. He's on.
Oh, that's
Charlotte
right. He
now.
Did get traded.
Yeah. Who's in Charlotte now?
Who's there? Oh, it's like freaking Big Baby and Chuck. Or no,
Big Baby's out. It's Chuck Hayes.
Oh, you know they brought the camp.
DeAndre.
They brought in Skittish Beely for a camp invite. That's amazing. That's so good. So like, there just needs to be a time this season where they're like desperate for big man death, which they will be. It'll be like in November. That's how shallow they are in the front court.
If you could,
and like, Boozer just comes out full hair, healing up. You know, like just high fiving, like, you know, just pining for Matt Barnes and high fiving DeAndre and just, you know, just being a bastard. That's what I want.
Never forget that Carlos Boozer, like, went away from a handshake agreement with a blind dude to get off the Cavs.
Not only that, but like, I think we established that, like, he only even agreed to the handshake deal to intentionally get out of the handshake deal.
Yes.
As much as I have feelings about DeAndre Jordan, and I am the dude who dropped chicken shit at a call 12 times the next day.
Yeah, man, you got hammered for that. Like, you were getting...
Actually, no, I think everybody but Bomani Jones pretty much was fine with it. Most of my Twitter members were like 95%.
I mean, that's the only thing that was the big beef that I saw, not to bring up
your
scurrilous.
To be fair, though, like, I don't want to make this out like you calling me out or that, like, I'm like, screw Bomani. Like, he didn't call me out. Like, he was tweeting at me. He didn't do, like, the quote tweet thing. And he basically just said, and, like, I thought he'd, like, a point to a degree. He basically was like, we weren't in the room, and agent-client negotiations are very fraught with peril, and, like, clients normally, you know, agents normally make the phone call for the client anyways, which I get is a logical line of thinking. My argument is that at the point when you take agency upon yourself to kick your agent out, that sort of assumes that you're going to do all the agenting. Like, if you're going to agree to a giant contract, that probably assumes...
Wasn't there some other, like, not David Falk himself, but some David Falk underling in...
Yeah, he brought in a lackey later because he had to have the lackey there to make the contract official. But, like, the majority of the day was just him. So, like, my whole thing was, like, and for one, like, I don't know if you guys have followed that guy, Bobby Marks, who's been on Twitter and, you know, yeah, who's been fantastic on Twitter since he left the Nets. He was the one who actually the next day was basically saying, like, it's not an excuse. Like, if you back out of a verbal agreement, the player is responsible for telling people that's the way it's done. But even setting that aside, whether Bomani's point is right or Bobby Marks's point is right, at the point when you kick your agent out for negotiating the basic contract details, you kind of also kick him out of doing your legwork for informing the other party. So, like, I mean, really, that whole column was a not hot take disguised as a hot take. All I basically said was, you have every right to do everything you want. Just if you're going to back out and screw a team for the next 5 years, at least just talk to them for 5 minutes. It's just a nice thing to do.
Yeah, my whole thing is like, is something that Malik Rose was saying in a Huffington Post thing I did, which I thought was, he's like, the amount of times the teams go back on contracts. I mean, my instinct is, you know, the kind of, as you might expect, is to side with labor over management in these kinds of situations. And to say, like, you know, and in situations where labor can have actual agency over management, I'm like, yeah, maybe that's a good thing, even if it did absolutely screw over the Dallas Mavericks.
No, I think, like, entitled to completely do that. There's just a way to do it and a way not to do it.
Yes. I mean, the one thing Malik Rose said was, like, look, you know, when I was a player, I got told by a lot, I'm paraphrasing Malik Rose now, that I got told by a lot of teams the equivalent of, like, a verbal, you know, like a handshake agreement that they later backed out on. And it was a time when that kind of information wasn't ever disclosed. Like, you didn't let people know that that had happened. But he was like, it's common. And so, yes, I totally see your point about the way he handled it. But, you know, that this kind of thing is happens more often than even we, you know, sports media types are aware.
Yeah, probably. I mean, I thought he had every right to back out. It's just like, I don't know. I'm team be nice if you could be nice. And, like, at that point, like, you know, if you're going to make the decision you're going to make, at least just if they're down and flew to the city to talk to you, and you agree with contract, just talk to him for 5 minutes and let him down in person. You know, don't just be like, ha ha ha, you're not coming into my house. One of those things.
But that was, I mean, God, that was so weird.
Admittedly, I'm not the demographic that thought that would be funny for various obvious reasons. I was in emotional despair. I was grieving for Dirk's career, you know?
Yes. Understandably. Yes.
You see him in Germany, Mike?
Dude, I mean, I'm going to be, I'm Jorge, if you're listening to this, my great boss, Jorge Arangure Jr., my boss at Vice Sports, whenever Dirk retires, there's 5,000 words coming from me. And I'm just going to be weeping.
Dirk is never retiring. It's okay. Don't worry about it.
That's what I tell myself to avoid coming to grips with reality. I also think the Tooth Fairy is still real.
Well, that one's just not real.
The Tooth Fairy is a horrible demon that rips like children's teeth out by the canines. I hope he's not real.
Jesus, Bob. That's some hot takes. That's how you make up hot takes right there. That's how you gain ground in the standings.
I'm going to give Bob 1 point for his strong stance on the Tooth Fairy.
I agree with that, actually.
Yeah.
So what are our points for this?
Yeah, what's the score, man?
There's one more, and then we'll get to the score.
Yeah.
But I need to know how many points I need to make up at the buzzer in order to really
shoot. You know what? All right, that's fair.
If Bob got 5 points for just saying Carlos Boozer is an asshole, I feel like I should deserve 5 points for an elaborate wrestling analogy with spray paint hair. That's all I'm saying.
11. 14, 15, 16, 19, 20. All right, Bob, you have 20. Mike, you have 1, 6, 9, 10, 11, 14, 17, 16, 19, 24. You need to make up 4 points, Bob. You need to deliver.
Big. But I need to fuck up, which is possible.
Hot take.
Yeah.
And Mike needs to deliver a soft one.
I think I need to deliver a negative take. It's possible. Mm-hmm. I'm due. What do we got?
I almost want there's the one that's sitting in front of me is has actual
actually bristles. Hold on, guys. Can we pause for 1 second? Because I'm getting a whole bunch of text messages from my mom about a table that I want to buy.
Okay.
I know that's a horrible thing to admit. So just pause, can we pause for 1 sec?
Okay.
Corbin, you'll edit this out? No, you're not getting edited out.
Oh, yeah, sure, I'll edit it out.
No, you're not. I know you're not. It's okay. All right, I'll be right back. Hold on. All right, let's do this.
All right, you can. All right. Yahoo sources. Bob Silverman staring at the buzzer.
Mm-hmm.
Yahoo sources. Charlotte, comma, Michael Kidd Gilchrist finalizing a 4-year, $52 million extension. Bob Silverman.
I think it's a great signing for Charlotte. I think locking up, I think Gilchrist right now is an underratedly good
Bob, before you continue.
Yeah, but.
Are you sure you're bringing the heat right now?
It's true.
I just want to remind you.
You know what? I'm probably not. But what I am doing right now is remaining truthful to my feelings as a sports blogger. And I'm going to say what my opinions are about Michael Kidd-Gilchrist regardless of the score.
That means
losing out on heat points and losing this match to my very worthy opponent, Mike. Then so be it. My hot take is that if I don't have my integrity as a guy answering questions in a fake trivia show about Adrian Wojnarowski's tweets, then I don't have anything. And that's that Michael Kidd-Gilchrist was a good signing and is already worth $12 million a year. And when the cap goes up, he'll be worth even more. The end.
Mike,
my response to that is I thought everything Bob said is beautiful, and I agree. And I think Corbin agrees with integrity and not betraying your true feelings and sticking to how you really feel, so instead of getting takes for clicks. And that's why we're all starving doing this and Skip Bayless is rich.
All right, so I docked you both a point for that. Those are the softest takes I've heard in my entire life. Mike, you are the winner. Congratulations.
Damn it, it was close. If only I hadn't started talking about food and called Corbin a wicked penis, but I would do it again.
Oh, you called me again? Oh my God, another point, Dr. Bob.
Look, I lost even more.
I lose my
don't care if I lose by one or I lose by 20.
Oh, anyway.
Like Vin Diesel said, doesn't matter whether you win by an inch or a mile. Doesn't matter whether you lose by a point or 20 points.
I'm sorry, who's Vin Diesel?
So, great action for our time.
Yeah, he's an assistant coach with the Phoenix Suns, I think.
All right, this has been a pleasure.
Indeed. We'll do it again, hopefully.
Congratulations to Mike. I don't have any prize to offer you necessarily.
Your love is a prize, Corbin. Especially with me always.
Perhaps we can get David Roth to sign something for you and send it over.
Oh, it'd be the godfather himself.
Yeah. All right. A pleasure speaking to both of you.
Thank you, Corbin. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you, Corbin.
My God, what a delight to speak to those two spectacular sports luminaries. You can follow Mike on Twitter at Mike. Can never remember how to spell his last name. I'm sorry, it's not his name. You can follow Mike on Twitter at Mike Like Sports. You can follow Bob on Twitter at Bob Sayeda. You can follow me on Twitter at Corbina Smith, at CORBINASMITH. Hey, keep your ears peeled. There'll probably be another episode sooner or later. Check out all the other podcasts. Over and Back is doing a really good series about historical NBA players right now. You should give that a listen. And hey, have a good day.